I'm Daniela. Welcome to my podcast, Because Everyone Has a Story, the place to give ordinary people's stories the chance to be shared and preserved, or stories become the language of connections. Let's enjoy it, connect and relate, because everyone has a story. Welcome to BeHaz. My guest is Zachary Daniel, a young man who is driven by entrepreneurship and desire for an unconventional life and career. I enjoy Zachary's story. It was genuine and authentic. He shares the good, the bad, and the ugly of being an entrepreneur in the cryptocurrency world and growing up as an adopted African-American into a white family. He is a jovial American Midwest native who graduated with a degree in nuclear medicine before pursuing his passion in finance. Now, a registered investment advisor, he leads a new wave in the industry focused on cryptocurrency. He recently came out with his fictional novel, Manifest Destiny. One of the things I found fascinated about Zachary's story is the lessons learned. If you want the business to grow, you have to have a strong foundation. Let's enjoy his story. Welcome to the show, Zachary. No, did I say it right? Zachary.
Zachary, yeah.
Welcome to the show, Zachary.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I know that you have a story, and I'm happy that you're here for that. Can you please tell us why do you want to share your story?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, kind of a different path than maybe a lot of people have gone down. I think through it all, there's some at least interesting parts that, you know, people either might find entertaining or might draw something from. Definitely different circumstances than a lot of people. There's something that kind of all connects in the end. So different, kind of different path.
Yes. And thank you for coming to share this story. Not everybody understands or believe that sharing their story is quite important, because sharing the story will help somebody somewhere. Great. When does your story start?
You know, I guess it all starts from the beginning, right? That's kind of, and what that be, I guess what that beginning would have been is my childhood and upbringing was probably different than a lot of people in that I was adopted. I was adopted at a very young age. I had no, you know, recollection of my biological parents at first, but I was adopted as a mixed race child into a middle-class white suburban family. And, you know, that probably is kind of where it all began, because, you know, it's kind of a different kind of upbringing. One, having your parents a different race, and then also growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood, white school, white everything. And I had a wonderful childhood, wonderful upbringing, but it definitely helped shape kind of who I am today and kind of some of the life choices that I made. You know, from the very beginning, my story probably starts with kind of, I would say, forging my own identity from an early age, because I kind of always knew I was different, knew that my parents were my adopted parents. And yeah, we didn't look alike, but that never factored into how I felt about them or how they raised me or anything. But when I got to, I would say, middle school or high school, then I started to realize, oh, wait, I am really different, because everyone else started commenting on it. And, you know, I think at a young age, you generally kind of go towards a tribe. It could be something as a club, you know, sports or band or science or whatever. Age old is kind of race. So people that look like you, people that sound like you, people that act like you. And something that was really evident early on was I didn't have any tribe. You know, obviously I was involved in sports. I had great friends and stuff, but there was nothing that I could grab to or kind of gravitate to as far as a group or identity right away. Forced me to kind of create my own, kind of become my own tribe in a sense. So that's probably kind of where it all started from the beginning, was very kind of individualized kind of sense of building myself, and probably something that I can reflect on, but I didn't really think about this at the time. Obviously, as a kid, you don't think things too in-depthly. You're just, you know, you're just trying to have fun and survive. Probably where it all started. I gotta give my parents a lot of credit. You know, the way that they brought me up, you know, they were always hyper conscious of race in, you know, my life. Never let me become a victim, right? Never have a victim mindset. You know, if I didn't make a team or I didn't make a grade, they never attributed it to someone treating me differently because of race or whatever. It always was, you know, I just didn't make it. I just didn't put in the work. I just wasn't skilled enough or whatever. And I think that's helped me certainly down the road as I've developed in that taking ownership and accountability for my own actions, not letting the outside world kind of determine what I can and can't do. I give my parents a lot of credit there. Maybe they didn't realize what they were trying to instill in their son, but they did nonetheless. And it was also interesting growing up. I had a brother who also was adopted. He dealt with things way differently than me. We're not biologically related, but he's 2 years younger. And we just dealt with things differently. And so it was just interesting to see having white parents and then being mixed race. They can be there for you. They can love you and then try to help you. But you kind of got to go through your own learning process. And so it was interesting seeing my brother. And some things I think he did better, some things I think he did worse, form his own sense of identity and kind of get through, some can be some difficult times. But yeah, that's probably where it all began. And then, you know, it emanates from there.
Yes, it's quite interesting because you bring points. You always wonder, it's nice that somebody's adopted. It's true that how do you find your tribe? So when you say you built your own tribe, how do you do that?
It's going to sound cliche a little bit, but it kind of starts with optimism. You know, I was always eternally optimistic. I always thought the future was brighter. The future was always going to be good, right? I never had a kind of doom and gloom mentality on the future, which can be easy to do because the world can be try to push you that way. But start with a positive outlook. And then also I was discerning. So the toughest part for me was discerning what to accept and what to let go. As a younger person, middle school, high school, people can be mean, but you have to pick what affects you and what doesn't. When someone being ignorant, when someone being stupid, when someone doesn't know what they say versus, you know, being malicious about it, kind of getting a thick skin. That was part of the whole forming my own tribe, because if you have a lot of numbers, you don't need to be super strong. You have other people to protect and kind of shield you. But if you're kind of on your own, or your own island. I say that, but obviously I have my family, I had great friends, but when you're kind of on your own island, you have to develop thick skin, you have to be strong. Optimism, and I would say thick skin. And then just not generally caring what other people thought of me, except for, am I a good person? Can they rely on me? Am I trustworthy? Things like that. Those were the important things I cared what people thought. Other than that, it didn't matter. It was like, what was going to be the best for me, or what did I like to do, or how did I like to look, whatever it might be. What interest I have, maybe it's not conventional. I cared how people thought I was character-wise. Other than that, it was just whatever.
You were saying that, yes, you can have people around you, but the truth is also what your personality is and how you deal with things, because you're mentioning that your brother was different in some, you know, same situation, he reacted in different ways. Mm-hmm. Sometimes better, sometimes not as good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would say, and it's tough to know exactly. That's just kind of the difference of, you know, difference of people, difference of approaches. So
yeah. And so what happened then? So you were there and you created your own tribe.
Basically after that, typical high school, middle school, went to college. I went to school for nuclear medicine, which is in the healthcare field. And for, I guess, those that don't know what nuclear medicine is, it sounds really all fancy and, you know, radioactive, like, you know, I'm about to turn someone into Hulk or something with gamma radiation. It basically is like an imaging modality. So think of like MRI or CT. They look at like body structure. So bones, ligaments, tendons, kind of how the body structure is. Nuclear medicine is all about body function. So how the body systems work. The heart, lungs, gallbladder, kidneys, basically injecting people with radioactive isotopes and then being able to image off that radiation how the body systems are functioning. Yeah, I went to school for nuclear medicine. I always wanted to be in healthcare. I liked helping people. My mom was a nurse. And so that kind of pushed me into the field. You know, I always had this passion for finance and investing and Bitcoin. Really, that Bitcoin is at the core of it. So I had been involved in Bitcoin for 5, 6, 7 years, had done a lot in the space. While I was at my internship for nuclear medicine, I started my first, this is kind of where my whole upbringing kind of came into practice, in that I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a friend approach me that had a business idea and involving Bitcoin ATMs, and, you know, we ran with it. We both had no experience in business. I obviously was broke as an unpaid intern. He was broke as a newly father of 4, I think. So yeah, he just had like his 4th kid, both broke, both inexperienced, but we were determined and to get this to work. I mean, we worked our butts off to try to procure a place, get the ATM, which we had to get from like the Czech Republic, you know, learn about incorporating and the whole process, programming the ATM, trying to find money from investors, which no one wanted to invest because this was like 2017, 2018 when Bitcoin was like $3,000 and it just fallen 80% and everyone thought it was going to zero. So everyone thought it was the stupidest idea. They're like, who would come to this ATM and put money in and pay this exorbitant fee? But we were persistent and we got it set up and we still ran into so many problems, especially with banks and such. And that's kind of what the thick skin is. And he was very determined. We weren't going to let anyone tell us we couldn't do it. We were either going to try and fail or try and succeed, but there was no kind of letting any outside force tell us we couldn't try, which they did. You know, the banks tried, businesses, it was tough to get a business. My own family and friends wouldn't invest, you know, so it was tough. But at the end of the day, we got it working. We got it running. It was a good success. It kind of gave me that taste of, like I said, it kind of owned tribe. If we had to coin a phrase for it, you know, kind of running your own business. I really liked that autonomy. I guess I would always say I had a friction relationship or a interesting relationship with authority figures, because if they gave me a rule that I didn't like, or I shouldn't say like, but wasn't a good rule, I'm like, why am I following this? Just because I said so. That's not a good reason. But if you start your own business, if there's a rule that doesn't make sense or something that, well, you just change it. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, you just don't do it. So that's something that I really liked about kind of that first business and that autonomy was, yeah, it is difficult. You don't always have the certainty of, like you do when you're with an employer, a security of, well, I know if I just do this, I'm going to be successful. I won't get fired. I'll have a certain wage and everything. And there is something to be said for that security. I was fine being on that island. It was something that excited me. After the Bitcoin ATM, I went to work in nuclear medicine for a while, and then I had an opportunity to quit and start my own investment practice, which is what I'm doing now, focused, you know, with a specialty in digital currencies, because that's my passionate background and such. So again, it kind of all stems a little bit from my upbringing and where some of my motivations or kind of brings me. It's been a great journey, and it's interesting, you know, we kind of glorify, you know, the entrepreneur, the breaking of the 9-to-5, and we kind of glorify it like it's some just unbelievable cool thing. But the truth is, you know, I wouldn't be doing it if I had a wife or kid, people that relied on me for, you know, my income security, inherently a little bit, you know, selfish. I would still be, you know, working nuclear medicine if I had those constraints. Yeah, people tend to glorify, you know, the truth is everyone has things that they should be doing or that's best for them. You shouldn't just be chasing something that you aren't ready for, because you have to be ready for possible failure, you know, being on your own island, not having security. And for some people, that's just not worth it. Don't look at it and be like, oh, I just need to do that. But at the same time, if you do have that feeling, you know, it's worth taking the leap.
Yes. And thank you for bringing that point. It's true that we always glorified. I particularly know that having your own business is very hard. You're there all the time. There is no, you know, it's your baby, so you can't just leave it and go. It has also the benefit of what you said, is your business. You do whatever you want and you change it as you please. But it's not for everyone. Well, I think that when you have a passion about something, okay, I know this will work, then that's all what really starts everything. You said that if you had a family, you wouldn't have done it. However, your friend had 4 kids and you did it. So what is his story?
He was doing that on the side of his normal job. And he actually, about 3 months into the business, he told me that he couldn't do it anymore. It's too much time commitment, too much risk. I bought out his side of the business. He only did it for about 3 months before I bought out his side and took it over entirely because of the family. Just too much time commitment. Too much uncertainty and risk.
You, however, were working too. You were working and doing this.
It was an interesting time. I was working, so I was an unpaid intern in nuclear medicine. Then I worked unpaid, yeah. Then I was working overnights at the nursing home as a CNA. And then I was running the business, which the business was 2 hours away. So I was driving back and forth probably 2 times a week, like 4, because it's an ATM business, so it kind of ran itself, but it had a lot of issues. Or you had to empty it and go to the bank. So I was probably driving, you know, 4-hour round trip a couple times a week on top of working overnights at the nursing home on top of going full-time NukeMed intern. So it was, I wasn't getting much sleep. It was a tough year. Very rewarding. So
it was 1 year only.
1 year for, yeah, the internship. So yeah, I was like, I can buckle down for a year.
And what happened to the business?
No, it stopped running it. It was probably like a year and a half, year and three-fourths that it was up and running. And we scaled it really well. But at the end of the day, you know, I didn't build the foundation of the business very strong because we kind of didn't think it was going to be overly successful. We thought it was going to be make a little money. We didn't expect it to kind of take off as it did. We didn't build the foundation of the business very well. And it got too big where it kind of ceased to function. And some of that had to do with the banks. The banks didn't want to accept our cash anymore. Sounds weird, right? Banks don't really like cash. And when we were dealing, we had a Bitcoin ATM, so people were putting in cash and then we were buying Bitcoin, you know, and depositing cash at the bank and then trying to wire it to a Bitcoin exchange, an ATM company. We had a lot of compliance issues and we tried to do the best we could to address it. But at the end of the day, we just ran out of banking. Some of that had to do with how I set up the business from the get-go. So that was definitely a lesson that I learned from that was if you want the business to grow, you have to have it on a strong foundation. And I really didn't for that business. We just kind of ceased to operate and I sold the assets and then moved on to the next thing. It was unfortunate because it was a very, very good business and I had it well established in the area.
You couldn't have saved it?
No. I did everything that I could to save it. It was impressive that I ran it as long as I did. You know, there was a couple times, there was one time we lost our banking. I think I took off for 2 days at work and I went to 20 banks to try to get banking again. And I finally got a bank to take us. And that was good for like another 8 months until I ran into more trouble again. It was tough. You walk into a bank with, you know, $50,000, $100,000 in cash. The bank has questions. They don't want the cash. It's a liability to them. And it doesn't matter how much KYC we seem to do, whether we got pictures of, you know, compliance, anti-money laundering, all this stuff. The banks, I was told, you know, multiple times, you know, not on record, basically saying the banks were like, you just aren't big enough yet. If you do $1 million a month, then you can come back to us. But there was this gap between doing a good amount of business and $1 million of business a month that the banks were just like, you're not worth it. We're going to have to put a lot of people on your account. We take a lot of risk and it's just not worth it for us. So it was a business decision. I wouldn't blame necessarily the banks. I would blame the regulation of the government that forces the banks to into that corners. I still have one ATM that I have at a friend's place. I just have it in his gun shop and we just kind of run it really small. But the overall business now.
You finished that business and you still were working graveyards and also another job?
Yeah, I was working. So I finished the business and the internship and I moved out to Oregon. So that's where I am now, Salem, Oregon. And I started nuclear medicine and I started my investment practice. But yeah, moved out to Oregon, fresh start. I love Wisconsin. I love the Midwest. Every time I go back, I'm telling you, Midwest has some of the best food, obviously best drink. I was ready if I was going to do a move, if I was going to try something new. I thought Oregon would be a cool state. It was the first place to offer me a job. That's what I did. Moved out here and it's been great. Oregon, West Coast is, you know, you're up in Vancouver. West Coast is wonderful. West Coast is great. I love it out here. Actually, a funny story going back to adoption is I said at the beginning that I had never met my biological mom, and I hadn't until I turned 18. So in Wisconsin, they have a closed adoption where you can't, you know your birth parent till you turn 18 because a lot of reasons. When I turned 18, I called the adoption agency, or I tried to locate the adoption agency, and they went out of business. So I was like, okay, well, I went to the state. They didn't have any records. What is going on here? I'm like, am I like a black market baby or something? Like, there's like no record of my adoption. Like, what is going on? But I knew that wasn't the case. All I had a couple of handwritten letters from her and a little bio on my family and then like a picture of myself in the hospital. On the picture of the armband at the hospital, you know, they have the kid's name. And so I got my last name off that picture. And I was like, okay, so I know her first name. Now I know her last name. And so then I like start obviously searching online, Yellow Pages, Google, everything that I could do to find. And there was nothing because I just knew her general age, her name now, and nothing. But then 2 months later, I was just searching through Facebook and there was a new profile made with that name. No picture, no post, no nothing, just blank. And so I messaged and it ended up being her. a phone call, which is very interesting, a little bit weird. I guess there's always this wonder of, like, is there some familial connection? Obviously, I was her son, but I had never met her. You know, was there like this innate connection? And I would say in general, no. What was interesting is when I did meet her, and I learned that I had a half brother and half sister, there are some things that are just biological. There were some things, some scenarios that we were in, the family would say something and I'd be like, that's something I would say. I haven't met these people in 18 years, but that is something I would say, or that's something I would laugh at, or that's something I would do. It was just kind of like almost like a deja vu, or like, you know, kind of out of body, where it's like, this is so weird because I haven't met these people for 18 years, but there's something about how we talk or how we'll do something that's biological, I would say. So that was interesting to see nature versus nurture. And I was really happy to, you know, start to establish a relationship again.
I heard from somebody else that was adopted too, that when they met their biological parents, that they connect in that sense. There's a mannerism that is kind of like a bit of finding a tribe.
Yeah, yeah. But there's probably always some kind of deep-pitted, maybe fear or apprehension that I would suddenly like start loving my biological mom, take an affinity to her. That's not the case. You know, my adoptive parents are my parents. I'm sure they had some apprehension there. I mean, that's what I would think as a parent. Be like, I raised you for 18 years. You're my son. Now I'm reintroducing you to your flesh and blood. And, you know.
But that happens in so many levels too. We spent 18 years at least with our kids and the kids with us, and then after that they have their own life. The rest of your life is much longer, right?
That is true.
Yes, and even with your own partner, you're going to spend hopefully more years, right? That person is going to know you more than your parents. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you more, since you bring up how you grew up. And so you grew up in an environment with white parents and mostly white community. Did you ever feel any discrimination?
Oh, yeah, 100%. There were many things that were said that I knew at the time were dumb, wrong, ignorant. You know, maybe someone's just trying to get a laugh, not overly malicious. I look back at some of the things that were said, and I think a lot of people would cringe at what they maybe said back then. But again, people were young, but I think it had more to do with being a middle schooler, high schooler, a kid. You know, you let a lot of things go. Because if you got angry at everything, then you just end up as an angry person. You kind of have to understand when people are trying to be playful, you know, when people are trying to be mean. And if people are really trying to be mean and malicious, then you got to step up. Let it known that that was not okay. You know, I developed quite the leeway with that.
Yeah, so that was interesting for you growing up. So you did want to study something because you had to go to university, but you really had in the back of your head sense of entrepreneurial. Going back to that, so you were working as a nuclear medicine, and then...
Yeah, graduated nuclear medicine, moved out to Oregon, started working in nuke med, 9 to 5, for about a year and a half. And then that's when I quit to start my own business for real. You know, I had that taste for entrepreneurship from the ATM. It still took probably like 6 months for me to wrap my head around and get prepared for like, okay, I'm really going to do this. I'm really going to leave my good job that I do like. It's stable and it's good for uncertainty, kind of take that leap. And it took me like, you know, about 6 months to kind of come to terms with that's what I was going to do. And so it wasn't like I just woke up and was like, all right, that's what I'm doing. It took a lot of thinking about and kind of mapping out my options and understanding the risk I was taking. And I think it was definitely the right choice.
Were you taking some courses in the meantime to learn?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like how they taught finance and investing in school. So I had always been self-learning. I just thought how they taught money, at the core of money, it was wrong.
But they don't.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. But it affects everything. On the side, while I was working in nuke med, I was, yeah, taking courses and passed the law, the Series 65, the investor law exam. Yeah, no, I got my certifications and I did my studying, and I'm continuing to learn because, you know, the tough thing about starting an investment practice when you're young is, if you think of investment advisors, they're older, they're more experienced, they have a lot of knowledge. And when you're starting off young, like I am, with no industry experience, you know, you have to try to do a lot to make up for that knowledge gap. Even though I passed the investment law exam, I still study constantly, trying to, you know, supplement my knowledge. So yeah, it's definitely unusual, you know, that path and that business risk. It's been very rewarding. Even if at some point my business or businesses fail down the road, I'll always have some entrepreneurial spirit in me doing something. I could always see myself working for someone again, if it's in the field that I'm passionate about, in finance or Bitcoin or crypto, for sure. But I will always have that kind of independent entrepreneurial kind of flair.
So you had your certifications, you quit, and then what kind of business do you have?
It's an investment practice. I'm an investment advisor, basically. You know, people give me money to invest. That's the kind of the bottom line of it. I generally am a higher risk investments. Obviously, Bitcoin, I can get a client's exposure to Bitcoin and digital currencies, and that's very, very high risk. It's also very unique. There aren't many advisors that can get their clients that kind of exposure because there's a lot of risk. A lot of advisors are older and don't know anything about the space. And if you don't know anything about the space, it's very easy to get taken advantage of or fall into scams or not know what to do. And then you add the regulatory environment on top of it, where the government doesn't, SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, doesn't have as good a guidance as they could have, Bitcoin and other digital currencies. So it's a risk. It's a high risk for the advisor and for, you know, obviously the client's investing. Now, I think that risk is worth the reward. Otherwise, I wouldn't be allocating some client funds to it. So that's one part of the business. Is I'm uniquely positioned that I'm one of the only advisors, I think, in the state, if not the only advisor in the state that does that. And then I also, you know, kind of individualize portfolios. So, you know, some of my niche is, you know, I have a couple people that do retirement stuff with me, but more of my niche is higher risk, higher reward, personalized portfolios that I manage actively. I have a very niche investment practice. It's my passion, and I think that, you know, exposing people to Bitcoin and other crypto easily without them having to worry about it is a service worth having, because in the past, you know, I've given people Bitcoin, I've told people to buy Bitcoin, and you know what ends up happening? They buy it, it goes up, they sell it, it goes up more, they buy it back at the top, then they sell it at the bottom, they forget about it, and then goes back up. All of a sudden, if they would have just calmed down, just held it, they would have been up, you know, X percent. Instead, they were down X percent. So there's a lot of volatility, emotion, misinformation, misunderstanding about Bitcoin, and it's just easier for me as an advisor. Obviously, last year, the whole crypto market was in the tank, so
everything was down anyway.
Everything was down. Everything.
And then you're gonna get older, and then you're gonna be one of those older advisors, more clients.
Yeah, no, I'll be one of those older advisors, and hopefully, I won't do the same things that other older advisors that do now that I don't like their practice.
And Sag, tell me, would you have done anything differently?
There was a couple things I would have done a little bit differently in starting the business. I think with my ATM business, it was I didn't build a strong foundation. With the investment advisor business, I think I built too strong a foundation in that I think I was overly cautious in how I was setting it up, in that I probably spent more on lawyers and consultants building the firm than I needed to. And some of that was just, you know, I wanted to be sure, which I was glad about. I think I probably didn't need as much effort or money spent in that to start. I'd say that's the only like small regret. As far as my career path and choices and that stuff, no regrets at all.
I don't know if there's regrets. I don't know if you've not heard of Daniel Pink. He actually talked about regrets. It's also part of life. I feel that there's no regrets. It's just lessons that you have. And then from the lessons, you grow. And also, if you change anything, you wouldn't be where you are.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And yeah, that's a good point about regrets. If you went and changed it, you wouldn't be where you're at now. Yeah, that's a good philosophy to have.
One last question, Zach. Tell me anything silly that you have or do.
Anything silly that I have or do. Okay. I guess one thing, and this is the first thing that comes to mind. Obviously, there's a lot. If you ask my friends, they would have like 25 stories. Something funny or weird that I do. Me and my friend, we'll play video games regularly. And I would say we just make the weirdest video game noises that have ever come out of people's mouth. Like if someone was listening to our conversation, we're grown men, but we're just making these weird video game noises as we're playing these video games. And it's just like our communication styles, like basically forms of like squeals and grunts and just like stupid. It sounds like we're like toddlers playing this game. It's fun. And yeah, if someone listened to it, they'd be like, what is going on in this conversation? Like, how are they communicating like this? And so that's one goofy thing that I continue to do. There always will be child in me.
It should be always, otherwise you were too serious.
I guess that's something goofy is there's still a lot of child in me.
Zach, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it too. It was great. Went by fast. No, we had a lot of fun. So
yes,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I am Daniela, and you were listening to Because Everyone Has a Story. Please take 5 seconds right now and think of somebody in your life that may enjoy what you just heard, or someone that has a story to be shared and preserved. When you think of that person, shoot them a text with the link of this podcast. This would allow the ordinary magic to go further. Join me next time for another story conversation. Thank you for listening. Hasta pronto.